It is check-in time with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for another Tacky Talk. How are you, Tacky?
Hey, Joe. Good to see you all. I want to apologize slightly in advance because my lingering sinus viral thing is still there, having a mild cough. I did see the doctor, folks, so allergies are part of it, but the flu from April is still leaving a bit of a small viral load of my sinuses. It is not COVID. Have I tested any more times for COVID? Like everybody has been doing. So I have some water, and you might have to bear with me a little.
We will certainly do that, and we hope you're feeling better soon, for sure. But it didn't stop you from getting out to all the 4th of July festivities.
Yes, I had a wonderful time at the Housenick Family Fun Day on Sunday in the early afternoon. Actually, it was a 10 to 1 event, and then the hot sun. But the Housenick Community Council, the Boy Scouts Troop 6, the city, all did a wonderful job to bring an event that's been suspended for essentially 2 years. So, happy to be a contributor, a donor to the event. Had a good chat with some folks. But most importantly, it's good to see people out and have a good time. And, made my way to Adams Shore on July 4th, as well as Germantown, and did the Marymount Parade. And great to see the neighbors and, people enjoying the day. It was perfect weather for it.
Really was, yeah. As you mentioned, it was kind of warm, but it's it goes back so many years in this city that although it is a city of now over 100,000 people, it really comes down to small neighborhood groups like that.
Yeah, and it is challenging, because then you get volunteers, getting people to make donations and sponsorship. In the case of Marymount, in particular, it's such a great parade because every street makes a float.
Oh, yeah, it gets quite competitive in Marymount, as I understand, yes.
Oh, absolutely. So there's one of the longer parades. I think it's about a mile and a quarter. So I got my full cardio and steps in on July 4th. I don't do Squantum because obviously I don't represent Squantum. Bruce Ayers represents up there. So I keep getting asked by Squantum folks, why are you not in Squantum? I go, well, because Germantown has its own parade and family day event. And there as well in the Gull Point Yacht Club. So I represent Germantown. Logically, you're going to find me in Germantown.
Yeah. Well, it's not, I suppose it's nice to be asked, though, and nice to be missed.
You never know. Maybe I'll make a surprise visit at some point in my career. But
oh, a cameo appearance by Tacky and Squantum.
I need to get those extra steps in.
What's been happening on Beacon Hill since last we talked?
Well, we're down to less than a month. I mean, July 31st is end of session. It's a Sunday. Session closes Sunday. I fully am preparing for the whole weekend to be in formal session as we try to close everything else. So what, 31 minus 6 is 25-ish days remaining, I guess. And we have a lot of conference committees pending. We have the budget that's still being worked on. Well, we passed the temporary budget for the month of July, so we're using FY22 numbers to keep the government going. We have never shut down the government in my time in government, despite the budget. And we have the Wind Climate Conference Committee that I sit on, still working on that. Sports betting is still being worked on. We set up a mental health. We did a mental health bill, went to Senate. That's going to be in conference committee. We have a capital bond bill, I think, still in committee. We're going to have the $11 billion transportation bond bill that's gone to the Senate, that's going to go to conference committee. And once the Senate's done with it. It's going to be a very busy time with a whole lot of pressure, upwards probably 7 to 9 conference committees, plus every joint committee is pushing stuff out. We have an economic development bond bill that's still pending to come to the Florida House. We have a tax package that is a commitment by the legislative leaders. Both branches put some kind of tax package, which is still considered a work in progress. We have a veterans bill that came out of Ways and Means today on more veterans related services. So that's pending to hit the House floor. So there's a lot of big issues going on, as well as, I like to refer to as the bridge naming bills, smaller local stuff that's very important to reps in the local community, not so important for Quincy people. But, obviously we have to move a lot of those smaller pieces as well as before the session closes.
Yeah, do you anticipate, Tacky, all those bills that you just mentioned will be done this session?
Yeah. It's not the first time we've done a lot of pressure moving to the last days of session. But, you know, I fully anticipate all of them should have some outcome. There's a question mark I have about sports betting, but let's see what really happens. And I can tell you what I think was really going on. But, you know, right now, the objective in both branches is to boost produced compromise bills this point in July.
Okay. All right. Curious about if we can maybe delve into the mental health bill just a little bit and explain about what it actually does.
We did expansion of services on mental health to address a lot of insurance issues and existing programs, and also a lot of the post-COVID effects that I think everybody has some familiarity at this point, whether it be isolation or trauma associated with family members and other impacts of COVID, economic and, you know, things that happen in our real lives at home. So, you know, we did a lot of, you know, mental health expansion in that area and, you know, put more resources into the existing system and, you know, basically just, you know, create more support for the existing network. The step therapy one's more interesting. The step therapy has been a long conversation. I think everyone may have experienced this at one time. That one's actually more fascinating. It's because insurance companies can deny you your prescriptions for treatment by a doctor if the insurance company decides it's its decision that cheaper alternative method is preferable.
Oh, so counseling as opposed to medication, maybe?
Or physical therapy before surgery, or, you know, but more severe is actually people need various drugs for cancers and other types of conditions that need medication. So the insurance company may override the doctor and your decision by not paying for that treatment and instead offer a cheap alternative treatment. So 30 states have a mechanism by which allows patients and doctors to make a decision and bypass this process. It's called step therapy. It's called step therapy because you step up from a cheaper alternative to the next cheapest, next more expensive alternative to the next most expensive alternative to find the result, as opposed to skipping ahead to what the doctor and you as a patient decide that should resolve the issue. So we set up a mechanism by which people can get the exemption from the insurance company in a timely manner, but to be able to bypass this step process and go straight to drug. And certain conditions include that's evidence that this drug has caused harm before, this drug has been used before on you and has caused damage or its effectiveness. We set criteria that if doctor and the patient demonstrate insurance company, we've been here, it doesn't work, we shouldn't do this yet.
Okay. And as I understand too, there's a provision that allows for an annual mental health checkup in addition to, like, you'd get a physical checkup.
As you can tell, I'm trying to remember if it's in there. The answer is I don't remember. So I'm having to check up myself, I guess. I don't remember off the top of my head. It sounds like it is, but I just don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay. But it's still in committee, you say, or it's been reported out of committee?
It's the Senate and House of alternative versions. It's going to conference committee.
It has. Okay. All right. Very good. So there's a lot going on. Curious about to the capital bond bill. Anything locally that is included in that, do you know?
Well, the big transportation bond bill accomplishes two purposes. One is to obviously continue to support our local infrastructure. I got $7 million for the C Street Improvement Project in the bond bill. But also the second purpose of the bond bill, which is also critical, is to ensure that we're able to do the federal match against the federal infrastructure bill. So I know that our congressional delegation has been going around the state talking about it, and it's such an important bill for us, and great job by our U.S. senators and our congressional delegation on ensuring that Massachusetts gets its fair share. But we have to match. So depending on the project, it can be up to 20% that the state has to match against the federal money. So this bond bill is also crucial because for us to get the federal money, we have to put up a share.
Okay.
So they got to be ready projects, you know, ready to go projects. They can't be, you know, mythical projects, idea projects. And then we actually have to put up, the state has to put up 20%, up to 20%, depending on circumstances, that we're ready to go. We have our money. Give us money. and we can prove that we can pay too.
So
this bond bill needs to really get done this cycle. And obviously, like I said, C Street, you know, state roads, municipal roads, I mean, all wrapped up in this. But, you know, the big impetus is to get the federal match against the federal money so we guarantee we get the money. In the meantime, the governor did sign the Chapter 90 bond bill for $20 million. And that is direct grant assistance to all municipalities for local bridge and road work. So it's about $1.9 million-ish for Quincy. I think it'll probably be adjusted because the census went up. So it might be a little more than $1.9 million. But, you know, it'll be direct distribution to the municipalities, and the state will pick up the bond interest as opposed to municipalities. So we'll pick up the debt on those projects that the city chooses to use that money for. So recycle, and you know, it varies in different amounts of recycle.
Yeah, but, no, that's a good deal for cities and towns for sure.
Oh, when we pick up your debt, it's always a great deal, right?
Right. Yeah.
You know, things like Chapter 90. So in school building assistance, right? We pick up to 60 to 90% of the debt, depending on the circumstances, right? So, but the big impetus for the $11 billion bill on transportation is to get our federal money by making sure that we can pay our match.
Okay, yeah, that they used to be called in Obama era shovel ready projects, right?
And they are shovel ready. Yeah, you're already on the move to get this done because the distributions over the course of a decade, the federal money.
Yeah.
So the bond bill follows the federal money regarding distribution. So this is a bond bill that's going to last more than a decade because of the, you know, bond bills we pay over a long time. It's not like we pay 10 years and just pay the whole debt in the same year. So, you know, it'll be, you know, it's a very long stretch bond with different deadlines and bonding.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I mean, it's tied to the federal money. It's a 10-year distribution of federal money. All of us might be long gone by the time we finish those distributions. But, you know, if we don't do this now, it only delays getting our money.
Right. Yeah, no, I understand. Can we talk a little bit about the Supreme Court's ruling in the state of New York when it comes to carrying concealed weapons and how that might affect Massachusetts, Jackie?
Yeah, there's been advice given by the AG's office and Executive Office of Public Safety that doesn't affect FID cards, basically people who want to get rifles or long guns. So it doesn't change that process. It does change the process regarding handguns, and that you know, the concealment handgun issue is a little confused because, like, you can display a weapon in public, which I'm still confused where the Supreme Court was going with that. But the more important part is the licensing part, where the New York State for 100 years has required to demonstrate a good cause. You have to have a purpose to get a handgun and a concealed handgun. Massachusetts has a lot of discretions to police chiefs regarding a purpose. Right now, the AG's office and Executive Office of Public Safety believes that that our current law doesn't need to be changed and issue guidelines that advises police chiefs how to comply with the Supreme Court ruling within the boundaries of our state laws. From our standpoint in the legislature, it is being reviewed. Joint Committee Judiciary oversees firearm issues, and they're trying to also make a determination if we need to change laws to come into compliance with the Supreme Court ruling. We're not the only state. All states are trying to, right now, figure out if their laws are in compliance. So, you know, obviously, someone's going to file a lawsuit at some point, but because that's what people do. But right now, the belief by both the Attorney General and the Executive Branch, the Governor's Office, believes that, you know, we can work within the current structure to comply. But the legislature may have a different opinion as we do our review. And will it get done before the session's over? I don't know. There's a lot on the plate, as you can tell. And this could be put on our plate if there's determination we have to readjust our laws to reflect the court ruling.
Right. Yeah. The biggest difference, I, at least in my reading, it is that police chiefs cannot really ask why you want to have a concealed handgun, I guess.
Well, it's that the purpose of your asking for the purpose shemat is not the determining factor
Okay.
in getting it or not. I don't think it says you can't ask. It's just they can't use that as the reason for no.
Okay, so it's a fine line. Yeah, I can see where the gray area is for sure.
It is tricky because the state gives a lot of discretion to these chiefs. We
Yeah,
are,
they
do have an
do.
appeal process, to the local court system. You don't like the chief's decision. We do have a robust an executive office public safety, a very robust firearm license division. But I mean, it's whatever Supreme Court rules, it's not as cut as dry as the public thinks, because they don't actually say A, B, C, D, do this. They just rule on the fact pattern presented. So the specific fact pattern is the New York law, not
Right.
Massachusetts law, not California law.
Right.
Just the New York law. So as a result, I was trying to interpret, what their law means relative to a law in New York. And our laws are not the same state by state. We are 50 different states and territories laws. So this is kind of the challenge where we're trying to figure out the fact pattern in New York, the specific law in New York, and what parts apply to our state. And we're not the only one doing this. Everyone's trying to figure it out.
Yeah, it's the same thing with the Roe v. Wade ruling. I'm sure it's the same thing with the recent EPA ruling from the Supreme Court as well. You know, what does it mean locally? Because there are, as you say, there are states' rights, you know, that come first.
Yeah, the EPA ruling is actually interesting because every state has different environmental laws. The EPA historically sets the floor, and on some instances, not all instances, some instances, but people have a local Environmental Protection Agency. They have their own regulatory process. They have their own state laws, and what are the laws there that used to be EPA oversight that states will pick up the responsibility for? And in the case of like using coal, for example, that's been phased out on its own for the last 20 years. Gradual failure. There's minimal coal electrical generation in the New England grid system. Very minimal. You may see it in a crisis, burning coal, but very minimal.
Yeah.
So there also the reality of that case is that fossil fuel burning is gradually being phased out anyway. It's slowly going away, but it's not overnight, but it's slowly moving along in exchange for renewable power. But the underlying case on that really involves the fact that did the EPA overreach utilization of the Clean Air Act. And that's the argument is that if it isn't within specific powers stated in the Clean Air Act, you overreached.
Yeah.
And the power plants, were not part of the Clean Air Act. So they call it overreach, despite the fact, I don't know, it's called the Clean Air Act. It's got a, they're looking for clean air. So I mean, it again bounces the power back to Congress on to take action. And we know that they're dysfunctional. Let's call it what it is, folks. I mean, they're not going to do anything. And then if not, then it bounces back to the states, to see how much they have authority. And power plants are a bit tricky because they're FERC regulated, Federal Energy Commission, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission regulated. So the states have jurisdictional challenges between FERC and us. So I think, but then again, like I said, a lot of these power generation facilities have been complying with EPA standards for quite some time already and
Yeah.
made major capital investments. Well, in principle, it's a great case for overreach of government. The reality is that I don't see power plants taking apart their investments already to for a greater filtration systems on fossil fuel burning.
Right. It's like the car manufacturers are, you know, complying with the California's emission standards because they set the benchmark for the rest of the country.
Well, exactly it. And if they've been making these major investments on better emissions control for a long time, though. That's a lot of money. So I don't see them like, oh, let's dismantle our filtration system that we invested millions of dollars in.
Right.
I mean, there's a practical component to all of this stuff too. But the real question is again, how far is overreach, and will Congress have to take action, and can and how much power is now put into the states to pick up those responsibilities that the EPA had regarding clean air. Again, it's only the Clean Air Act. You know, people say it's gutted the EPA. It's just the Clean Air Act.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, I mean, commentators, you know, will put their own spin on things as they see it. But the facts are what the ruling is. And if you want to read it, you can. It's public information.
It's a specific issue regarding the Clean Air Act. They didn't wipe it out. They didn't repeal the Clean Air Act. They just addressed a specific issue regarding overreach of power in a specific circumstances regarding power generation facilities.
Period.
Yep. As again, fact pattern in the case and the challenge, the challenge associated with trying to figure out, you know, what the court's interpretation is of the law and how everything else fits around it. So it's simple, but it really isn't.
Sure. Curious, Jackie, about the, how would I describe it? The environment or atmosphere on Beacon Hill, given this is the administration's last term in office, would you say it's light? Would you say it's lackadaisical? What would you say?
Well, I mean, you know, we all use the term lame duck governor, right? When you're not going to return. On the flip side, though, I mean, the governor still wields power. He has the veto, he has land in veto, and he's running against the end of the session where it closes the window of time we can do veto overrides against the governor. So unless under emergency rules, we come back post July 31st to overrides, his overrides are most likely going to stand. And so, I mean, he's a lame duck governor, but kind of not, because he still has all those gubernatorial powers that he's always had for the last 7 years and every governor prior. And I think the challenge of government coming into the late summer, into fall, is that people aren't going to wait around to lose their jobs with the new administration, right?
Right.
You get out before you're fired, because the new administration is going to come in and terminate, particularly the large upper levels of executive staff, so very administrations, because they, you know, they need your leadership.
Well, the cabinet will be all new, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think one of the challenges in government, and you guys will feel it too. I think everyone's felt it because I get the phone calls, is that once leadership departs, there's a lot of holding pattern. Mm-hmm. Since there's no leader, they just keep doing what they're normally doing and not do anything new, because if they do anything new, you don't know what the new boss wants.
Right.
So what's going to happen is going to be a lot of just holding pattern on things as we close into the month of December. So-called the train runs on time, you know, quote unquote. We'll just continue on the best it can. But I mean, in interaction with us in the legislature, since the governor is not running for re-election, it's great we could say whatever you want and not worry about the consequences.
Now the truth comes out.
Yeah, I mean, you can put very populist stuff out, and even his proposal for a tax package in many ways. And I know there's a capital gains reduction, which targets mostly people of greater wealth. But I mean, the majority of that tax package, you know, is populist. And frankly, you know, if you're in another state, this is a Democratic tax package.
Yeah.
Except in Massachusetts.
Interesting.
So,
the state has a history of that, though, really, of Republican leadership with a Democratic-controlled legislature, right?
Yeah, and Republican policy is not a surprise. I mean, would look like a Democratic policy in a more conservative Republican state.
If they wanted to get anything at all done, right?
You hit it on the head. That's exactly the reason. You know, if you want to get it done, you got to work with the legislature, and it is a very powerful Democratic legislature.
Right, exactly, yeah. How are your colleagues? This is a re-election year. Are they anxious about it now? With the pandemic's still upon us. I mean, there's going to be that factor too.
Everyone's doing what they're supposed to do during election cycles. I mean, we have to raise our money. Make the proper investments in our communities. We're going to work on local policies important to us. As you can tell, I do pay some attention. My memory doesn't always remember every single thing, as I've demonstrated more than once. I do not remember every detail. But I mean, you know, we are aware of, you know, things that are important to everyone. Like I said, talking about the step therapy bill in particular, you know, it's going to have a massive impact on people's quality of life and healthcare. Obviously bring home the bacon. I mean, the budget, you know, has a lot of local projects in there that we want to get done. Making sure that we get our message out there, whether it be in this format or by email newsletter. In my case, I use the HouseNet Bulletin. I do encourage everyone to please subscribe to the Housenik Bulletin. It's how I hit a page to communicate to folks about stuff that, like what we're doing here, is not what you'll find in the evening news or the major papers. We talk about other stuff.
Right.
I think it's important for people to know other stuff we're doing that isn't, you know, front page of the Globe, Herald, or the Springfield Republican, or the Lowell Sun, or anywhere else. So, you know, that's part of our messaging, is to remind folks, yeah, we got these big ticket items, but, you know, we're also doing these other things as well that's important to you.
Oh, I agree. You know, people are probably not aware of your work with the Beaches Commission right here in Quincy, you know, and efforts to preserve Wollaston Beach and the entire coastline.
Exactly, and create some form of a uniform programming throughout the metropolitan beaches, working the Beaches Commission. Exactly. I mean, you know, things like that. I mean, you know, we talk about racism issues here. We talk about very local provincial issues about different neighborhoods, stuff that would never make a major paper. And, you know, the impact on things like climate change, you know, on our coastlines, and, you know, actually engaging residents that are actually have impacted by this. I do know some people that live right on the water too, just like you all. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, very visual things that, you know, a lot of our public policy, we try to push the stuff that we actually see in real life. So, you know, we talk in the big picture level, statewide level, you know, right now the feeling is that the Democrats can do quite well on the statewide level. With Sonia Chandy is no longer in the running, Maura Healey has a clear path to the final and basically can save up her resources for post-Labor Day sprint. The other statewide candidates in the Democrat primary, very exciting. I do, again, remind everyone, please do vote in the primary. These remaining candidates that do have opponents, you know.
There's an attorney general's race, a very important one, yeah.
And an auditor's race and a secretary of state's race, very important for everyone to get out and vote to make sure, you know, the Democratic primary that you're heard, as well as the Republican primary still has a governor's race between Jeff Deal and how do you pronounce his name? Doherty?
I think it's Doty.
Doty, Doughty.
Correct, yep.
So I saw his first TV commercial. He's always decided that he's not going to address Jeff Deal at all and just run against the Beacon Hill establishment and the legislature, which I'm kind of like, shouldn't you try to win the primary?
Right. Yeah. One step at a time. I saw the same one and I thought the same thing. Yeah.
Spending like $250,000 for an ad against a Democrat without knowing if you're going to be there.
Right. I guess it's positive thinking.
Yeah. I mean, politics 101, one race at a time. You know,
right.
Jump over a race till you finish the one you're in. So, the general feeling is obviously very positive among Democrats about winning the corner office and all the lower constitutional officers. And right now, looking around the ring, talking to other colleagues, as well as, you know, people who do this for a living, you know, political observers, that we don't feel that any existing Democrat is in danger of losing to a Republican seat. Right now, the general feeling is that incumbent Democrats should win the Democrat primaries. And the open seats, and there's quite a few open seats for state senators, no less than six, and about maybe a dozen House seats. You know, not a very clear indication who's going to win those primaries.
September 6th, by the way, folks, that's the primary day. It's the day after Labor Day.
And you can do mail-in voting if you are not going to be around Labor Day, post-Labor Day. So definitely contact the city clerk's office. I'm sure Nikki will be on to talk about this more with you, but starting early mid-August, you'll reach out to the city clerk's office. The application is online in the city clerk's office right now. Mm-hmm. Print it, mail it in, you get your ballot in the mail, and then you can vote in case you're not around at Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, and there'll be early voting as well, both for the primary and the general in November too, so.
Yeah, I mean, about 10 days out. And again, the city gets to pick the locations, the time, including one weekend.
Right.
Yep. Also, voter registrations change. It's gone from 20 days to 10 days.
Yep.
So you actually, if you move recently or your birthday is in August deep, you know, if 10 calendar days prior to September 6th, you know, is your last day to register to vote.
Speaking of a local issue, is Quincy Bay going to get dredged anytime soon, Techie?
The favorite topic that's keeping us by all the boating community. We got $600,000 in the last ARPA funding for it. We need little, it's only 10% of what we need.
Oh, okay. So
we got some bond money in the past for dredging generally that is still valid bond. We need to kind of shake that tree, most likely with the new governor for next cycle. There is some more ARPA money opportunities, most likely in 2023. And there'll be other capital project monies coming down the pike, I think, in 2023 as well. So we got some money. We're going to get more. It is a 20% match. Again, the city of Quincy has a 20% match against the state component. But we're getting there. It's like a lot of these projects, including the C Street project, we got $700,000 cash. It's definitely going to be a piecemeal situation. It's a little bit here, a little bit there. Eventually, I'm going to cobble it all together. And working with the new governor's office, you know, hopefully we can get them to shake it loose.
Okay, I had no idea it was so expensive. I've been asked about it recently by Quincy Bay Race Week is coming up. So some of the Commodores at the yacht clubs were inquiring about it.
Working on it. It's not easy, as you can hear, because there's not enough cash to grab. Despite there's a lot of it, it's a lot of us is the problem. Yeah. We do have cash on hand, but you got 160 of us. So it's not like anyone's going to walk away with an enormous chunk.
Somebody in the western part of the state doesn't care about Quincy Bay.
Precisely it. And but with peace, it's been many years now. Me and Bruce Ayers and John Keenan have been cobbling together a little bit of time to make this all work. And the last time was dredged, I think. I'm trying to think how much it was. I think it was like $1.5 million. It was the last time it was like, but that was like, that's very much 20 plus years ago.
Wow. Okay. So it definitely needs it, I'm sure.
Yeah. The Quincy Bay is naturally very shallow. Mm-hmm. Channels are around 6 feet-ish deep. And because of the nature of putting beach sand, our beaches are not natural beaches, they're artificial beaches. It's across a fill, a natural fill-in, because the tide would wash the sand over many years back into the bay, and it would just sit.
Yep.
Really sit in the bay.
It's like a big soup bowl, you know, the sand goes in but doesn't go out.
And then you're waiting for nature again to pick up sand off the top of the sand in the bay and just move it out of the bay and keep on going. But we're talking, that, I mean, that's like, you know, decades and decades and decades of nature, meaning to gradually pick up a little bit of sand every time and just keep moving it on. So as the sand goes into the bay, you wait for nature to take its next step, and it's not going to be fast enough to clear a channel.
Right, exactly, yeah. We'll talk a little bit about some international issues. We haven't talked about the sure. Ukraine situation in quite a while.
Well, as you guys see in Ukraine, the Russians have decided that they're going to focus in the eastern Donbass region. It's all over the news. And they've made significant progress in that area. And what's actually kind of interesting is the fact that for the first time, Eastern nations have attended as observers at a NATO conference. That's never happened before. Japan, Korea, and other countries in Asia have gone to a NATO conference. It's, why would they? It's North American Treaty Organization, right? Right. But because of global security, and you have two countries in particular that are top three militaries in the form of Russia and China, and you know, increasing aggressive nature, not just economically, but also increased military presence. You know, obviously, if you're a small neighbor, you have some concerns. Mm. So the fact that some of these other highly industrial U.S. European ally nations that are outside of Europe, you know, in the Asian Pacific, you know, it's an indication that there's some concern about global security.
Sure, I'm sure South Korea is always warily eyeing their neighbor to the north and its connection with China.
Yeah, exactly. And also the Japanese are within ballistic missile distance of North Korea as well. And the Chinese and Russian fleets, you may not realize, but Chinese and Russian air and naval have been doing joint exercises in the Pacific for many, many, many years. And they're not surprising, you know, Russian Chinese warships will travel through Japanese territorial waters. They're in dispute because they have not stopped arguing about land even before World War II,
right,
to do that. And most people don't realize the Russians never signed a peace treaty with Japan from World War II.
Really? I didn't realize that either.
Yeah, they're technically, quote unquote, still at war, even though technically they're not doing anything. but they never formalized a peace treaty, which means that if they did, they would actually have settled disputes regarding borders, part of peace treaty dispute. So a lot of access to fishing and islands and whatnot is part of it. And UN agreed upon treaties, you know, via the UN, you know, how it defines how territorial waters work and, you know, economic development zones of water, you know, especially for a boat, ship slash boats plus, you know, water resources, whether it be fishing or getting seaweed or whatever number of resources that are in the ocean, you know, are done by treaties. But if you don't have a peace treaty, you don't really have a territorial dispute resolution. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of unsettlement that we don't really feel as much where we live, but, you know, everyone's got a bigger aggressive neighbor next to them. And Ukraine has definitely woken up the world about the fact that sovereign nations, smaller ones, are open game for bigger ones. And, you know, we talked about how Russia has all kinds of domestic, economic and domestic social issues that Ukraine can help solve much of it. But, you know, if the idea is that, you know, Russia can take, you know, 20%, 15, 20% of the country, Ukraine's a very big country, actually, when you look at the map.
Yes.
And, you know, and Ukraine decides, well, you know, all right, we're going to stop fighting and you can have those pieces. Well, what's stopping, for example, China to start taking small islands around the Pacific against these smaller nations, expanding their economic development zone, and they're not allowed to fight back? That's intrusion of the territorial waters, or disputed territorial waters. So I get Taiwan's a very big deal. We've talked a lot about that, but, you know, it's the entire Southeast China Sea, you know, as well as the northern eastern sections of Korea, Japan, but you also got the Philippines, Indonesia, Cambodia, Thailand, Singapore, Malaysia, and all those countries where, you know, huge percentage of cargo passes through their waters. Mm-hmm. Not surprising, you know, the Chinese want to control all the waterways for that cargo traffic. And, but I mean, at the same time, the U.S., as well as our neighbors in Australia and other places, have been patrolling those waters against pirates and other things, shipping lanes. So, you know, the Chinese don't actually do the policing, for lack of a term, against pirates through the entire shipping lane. Yeah. It's the U.S., India, Malaysia, Australia, Indonesia, anything, anybody that has any, even if it's limited blue label Navy capacity, you know, are the ones that, you know, keep those cargo lanes moving safe from pirates. So, and pirating is still weird in the 21st century. It's not, it's just different, but pirating is still real on major shipping lanes. So a lot of this territorial control globally is up for grabs. Ukraine has really, you know, shook the world regarding how, you know, we need to discuss security against the nation. You got COVID impact. You have now very devastating war on the European continent. And we have global supply chain problems and a global workforce shortage issue too. It's not just the United States. So, you know, it's like the last few years, international level, you know, is a huge convergence of many, many different issues colliding at the same time. And also, you know, Russia has also now created something that Russia didn't want, and I'm sure China doesn't want either. It's now created a resolve among smaller nations that we need to get together to protect ourselves. And the United States has now become the preferable umbrella partner militarily with security, but, you know, it's going to eventually also become a stronger tie as an economic partner as well.
Right. Yeah. So interesting that there's such a changing, volatile situation. You know, and the more volatile it gets, you know, one spark could really trigger some worldwide problems.
Well, the blink of an eye, right? It's, yeah. You know, it's truthful that China and Russia have grown closer ties since geopolitical, because it's not just as simple as having the most money, the biggest guns. It's a battle, again, of Cold War regarding philosophical, domestic. So I always hear me say this over and over again, a lot of this stuff is domestic issues that are occurring. Places like Russia and China want to demonstrate that their political establishment, the operating method, the philosophy is superior to other countries' methods, probably the United States, the European nations, and many others, not to us, but to their own people at home.
Right. Yeah, that's why Xi Jinping visited Hong Kong, right?
To reinforce that Hong Kong belongs to them, which it does, which is legally true, but also reassert the fact that they do have the ability to implement Beijing law on a so-called separate but equal area. And I say so-called because I don't believe it was ever separate, but equal, separate all systems. We all knew this was going to happen. But there's also a different example as well of a person who's never left his mainland for the first time since COVID. Well, President Biden has left the country, as well as Secretary of State Blinken and Vice President Harris have all left U.S. borders multiple times now.
Yep.
In the last 2 years. Vladimir Putin has not left Russia other than go to Belarus in 2 years during COVID. The rest of the European nations, as well as countries like India and Southeast Asia and Australia, and Australia has a new prime minister, have all left their countries, you know, in the post, what do you call it? We're out of the major crisis and we're going to live in the virus world.
Right, right. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, we're out of the major death zone and now learning to live with this. All major world leaders have left their countries, including going to Ukraine. I mean, half of Europe leadership is going to Ukraine. But you know, Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping has not left the borders of the country since COVID began.
Right.
Nothing can go to one territory in Hong Kong and Belarus, which is basically part of Russia at this point.
Right.
But Putin, so it gives you an idea of, you know, completely different philosophy of operation. So again, it's not always about us, in the sense they like to make it portray as the U.S. versus them. It's about reinforcing their domestic power by demonstrating that they are superior to everybody else, to reinforce that to local population, by which, even though there's not a, you know, democracy in our eyes, but to maintain that, you know, we are better, we are stable, everyone is awful, you know, and our system is better, works. Don't think about using another one.
Right, right. Always interesting to hear your take on world affairs, Tacky. I appreciate it.
Hey, all politics are local.
That's a Tip O'Neill saying, right?
Even international politics. It's great when you beat up somebody else for your own political gain. It is not just uniquely American.
We could wax on philosophical, but we're out of time, unfortunately, this time around. So here's where we ask you to ask people to reach out to you.
Sure. 617-722-2370. Just call the office, hit a button, and we'll work our best to get back to you as quickly as we can. You know, my email still works, tacky.chan@mhouse.gov. I'm now drowning in climate change conference committee testimony, which is killing my inbox. But, you know, I do read it all. And, you know, we do prioritize, again, people that are looking for direct assistance, doing our best to try to help them as quickly as possible. State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook account. We're having a public hearing, I think, in the third week of July, not the 11th, the 18th. So, you know, we're going to have a public hearing. You can see streaming as we continue our process, as well as other useful information. And of course, at Tacky Chan Twitter account, you can see where I've been, pictures from this past weekend, for example. And TackyChan.org, which I looked at and realized they need to do an update. But again, a lot of useful phone numbers, more importantly, is a reference section for phone numbers. A local service agency and state government that, you know, can save you time from calling me if you can find it yourself.
All right. Sounds good. Always good to talk to you, Tacky. Appreciate the time.
Always good seeing you, Joe, and I'll talk to you soon.